What is the purpose of human life? It's a question that's been asked by philosophers and theologians for ages, but it's rarely been asked by scientists, at least not publicly. But Samuel Wilkinson takes a crack at the question in the new book, Purpose: What Evolution and Human Nature Imply About the Meaning of Our Existence. Samuel is an associate professor of psychiatry at Yale University, where he also serves as associate director of the Yale Depression Research Program. His articles have been featured in the New York Times, the Washington Post, and the Wall Street Journal. He joins us now to share five big ideas from his book.
I'm Sam Wilkinson, associate professor at the Yale School of Medicine and the author of Purpose: What Evolution and Human Nature Imply About the Meaning of Our Existence. The impetus to write this book came from an existential crisis I had while I was a medical student. For whatever reason, at this time in my life, I felt that science, and the theory of evolution in particular, threatened the sense I had, that we all have, that life has purpose, value, and meaning. After an intense period of study and reflection, everything seemed to come together in a way where, unexpectedly, science provided a framework for an overarching purpose and meaning to life. There are five big ideas in this book that I'd like to share with you. The first is that our existence is not an accident. One of the reasons the theory of evolution has been so controversial for the last century and a half is because many people assume it implies life is just an accident. We are nothing more than tens of thousands of intricate molecular mutations, or so the thinking went. Many people have taken this one step further, concluding there is no inherent meaning in life. We are doomed to live, breathe, die, and whittle away our lives in a cold, indifferent universe without any purpose to our existence. But it turns out this thinking is wrong. Evolution wasn't a random process. There are now countless examples pointing to higher order principles that have guided evolution. The best evidence for this is the way in which creatures have developed the same structures independently. For instance, birds, bats, and butterflies all have wings and the capacity for flight. But biologists tell us that through the long course of evolution, each of these creatures developed wings independently. Another example, a form of photosynthesis. A remarkably complex biochemical process has developed about 60 different times. And eyes, these remarkable structures by which we perceive the world, have evolved independently some 40 different times. It turns out that virtually every biological trait or structure has evolved more than once. Simon Conway Morris, an eminent biologist who, more than anyone else, is responsible for discovering this overall pattern, sums it up like this. I can't think of anything which has evolved only once, or very, very few exceptions. Other scientists frame it this way. While chance plays a preeminent role in setting the course of evolution, it contributes much less to the determination of its outcome. The second idea, which is a bit of a downer, is that unfortunately, we are selfish. In the opening pages of his influential book, The Selfish Gene, Richard Dawkins declares, "If you wish to build a society in which individuals cooperate generously and unselfishly toward a common good, you can expect little help from biological nature because we are born selfish." This is another reason why the theory of evolution has been controversial. What it implies about human nature is, well, not very encouraging. So is this true? Well, most people would agree, it doesn't take long to scan through the history book of humanity to see that, unfortunately, we do have a capacity to behave in terribly selfish and even violent ways. For a lot of us, this is a bitter pill to swallow and a very depressing view of human nature. Yet over time, we've realized that the picture of human nature is complex. And this brings me to my third big idea, which is that in a paradoxical way, we also have a deep capacity for altruism. But how, from a strictly scientific perspective, is this possible? Doesn't evolution favor the selfish? Well, it's complicated. This is best illustrated by a remarkable story of two shipwrecks at the same time and place. In 1864, two ships crashed on the opposite sides of the Auckland Islands, an archipelago 300 miles south of mainland New Zealand. The first vessel was captained by Thomas Musgrave. Following a harrowing ordeal of 18 months, and thanks to much ingenuity and resourcefulness, all of the men from Musgrave's ship survived. The second ship was led by Captain George Delgarno. Unfortunately, most of the men aboard Delgarno's vessel died. What was the difference? The survivors of Captain Musgrave's ship formed a remarkably cohesive group. This was best exemplified in the first minutes of the shipwreck, when Musgrave himself carried an injured man on his back as he swam through the torrential waves to the safety of the shore. The group from Dalgarno's ship, on the other hand, were characterized by an every-man-for-himself approach. Within the first few days following their shipwreck, they left a wounded man behind to die. So it may be true that at some periods in our evolutionary past, the trait of selfishness helped our ancestors survive. But it's not hard to imagine scenarios in our distant past similar to the shipwrecks at the Auckland Islands, where altruism, not selfishness, is what led to survival. As two renowned biologists have noted, selfishness beats altruism within groups, but altruistic groups beat selfish groups. Everything else is commentary. I should point out that this principle applies not only to the traits of selfishness and altruism, but also to a host of other opposing traits: aggression and cooperation, cruelty and kindness, lust and love. In a cruel twist of fate, nature has fashioned within us opposition in so many ways. In a very real way, we are pulled in different directions. This is what I call the dual potential of human nature. The fourth big idea is that life seems to be a test. When we combine the dual potential of human nature with the observation that we all have free will, all this provides a framework suggesting that there is a universal purpose to our existence. This purpose, at least one of them, is to choose between the good and evil impulses nature has created within us. Life, it would seem, is a test. And it can't be a real test unless we are pulled in one direction or the other. This framework of human nature also helps us escape the quagmire that philosophers, economists, and scientists have been stuck in for centuries. Are we selfish or altruistic? Are humans aggressive or prone to cooperate? Are we monogamous or promiscuous? The stunning answer seems to be yes, or at least we have the potential to be all of these things. History has too many examples of the darker propensities of human nature. One hardly has to try to come up with cases in point of this unfortunate truth. Yet history is also full of moral heroes, those who have chosen to follow the quiet but stirring and unselfish appeals to human nature. I'll share just one example. In the fall of 2004, 44-year-old Victoria Ruvolo of Long Island, New York, was driving home from seeing a niece sing at a recital when the 18-year-old passenger of an approaching car, Ryan Cushing, hurled a 20-pound frozen turkey toward her oncoming vehicle. Cushing intended the act as a prank, but the frozen turkey shattered Victoria's windshield and fractured many bones in her face. After extensive reconstructive surgery, Victoria spent 9 months in the hospital and rehabilitation centers before returning to work. Prosecutors were seeking the maximum sentence of 25 years in prison for Ryan, but Victoria had other plans. "I didn't want Ryan to rot in jail," she later recounted. She lobbied for a more lenient sentence, hoping he could still make something of his life. After pleading guilty, Ryan stopped to speak with his victim in the courtroom. The two embraced as he wept. "I'm so sorry. I didn't mean it." Her reply, "It's okay. I just want you to make your life the best it can be." From a purely biological perspective, how do we explain such behavior? Victoria Ruvolo faced a choice of how to respond, and she could have chosen otherwise. To act unselfishly, to forgive, to treat others with compassion. These capacities are nested to some degree in all of us. This brings me to my final big idea, which is that based on the way nature has created us, cultivating strong personal relationships helps bring out the better angels of our nature. It also makes us happier. Sometimes, in this hyper-politicized world in which we live, we are tempted to view the world as comprised of people who are fully good or fully evil. This is wrong, and it can lead to dangerous ideologies. The world is full of people, all of whom have both strengths and weaknesses. Each of us is a complicated mix of good and bad. My experience as a psychiatrist and as a pastor has convinced me that most people are trying to do what is right, but it's a struggle. Sooner or later, for all of us, the pull of selfishness is strong. We ought to be patient with each other and with ourselves. So contrary to what we might infer from the bitterness that seems to pervade much of our culture, the point of life is not to point out the weaknesses of your spouse, your neighbor, or even your political opponent. The point of life is to point out and overcome the weaknesses in ourselves. But this is hard work. How do we do this? If we believe in the most up-to-date theories of human nature, It's clear that the positive aspects of our behavior, love, trust, loyalty, kindness, all have their origin in the way that nature shaped our personal relationships. My argument is that when we invest heavily in our personal relationships, the point that they thrive, the more positive aspects of our nature are accentuated. It becomes easier to overcome the selfish tendencies with which all of us are burdened. And this is exactly what we see from the social sciences. In essence, we become our best selves when we prioritize our personal relationships. So if the purpose of life is to strive to overcome the weaknesses within us, the meaning of life is to cultivate strong and enduring relationships. At least this is what people report as the most meaningful aspects of their lives. This seems to be a function of how we are evolutionarily wired. It's how nature created us. These are the five big ideas in my book, Purpose: What Evolution and Human Nature Imply About the Meaning of Our Existence.
Thank you, Samuel. That was five big ideas from Purpose: What Evolution and Human Nature Imply About the Meaning of Our Existence by Samuel T. Wilkinson. I'm Michael Kovnat. Have a great day.